calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Time circuits are on, the flux capacitors are working. Ben, we are back in time.
Finally, it's been a while since our last trip.
It is Sunday, January 24th, 1988. The current time is 8:15 p.m. And we are in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada for the inaugural WWF Royal Rumble.
Yes, although I do have a time travel related question. I've often wondered. I know this might sound weird, but if a person time travels back to a time before they were born, are they gonna encounter difficulties with a flux capacitor, or, you know, with themselves potentially, because they're not supposed to do that?
Well, I mean, they're not supposed to have any interactions with the people they might meet in the future, but then again, if they interact with people, the people won't even know who they are because they're complete strangers. They haven't met them yet.
Well, unless you're Marty McFly getting flirted with by his mother.
That's right.
then it's a problem.
Now, Ben, as always, the number one movie playing in theaters on Sunday, January 24th. I was looking through the movie listings and I found this one called Good Morning Vietnam, starring Robin Williams.
I've never actually seen that movie.
Well, here it is. I have the trailer for this.
Very, very good.
Picture a man going on a journey beyond sight and sound. He's entered the demilitarized zone.
Good morning, Vietnam! Wow! I feel good!
Time to rocket from the Delta to the DMZ.
It's 0600. What's the O stand for?
Oh, my God.
It's Mr. Leo.
You know, this whole camouflage thing for me doesn't work very well.
Why is that?
Well, because you go in the jungle, I can't see you. If you're going to fight, clash.
Shaq is not what we program here.
Surprise! Surprise!
You are not funny.
You're not going to last long.
Boy, do I have a surprise for you.
Good morning, Vietnam!
In 1965, Adrian Cronauer was sent to do the impossible.
I was sent here on very strict orders from a colonel.
What the hell's going on here?
His mission? To build morale.
Where are you from?
Cleveland, man.
Obviously, Vietnam's not that much of a change for you.
His strategy? Keep them laughing.
If someone is not telling the truth, you say that they are full of...
His problem? Staying out of trouble.
You want to stick to playing normal modes of music. Jim Nabors, Mantovani.
Percy Faith,
good!
Yeah!
He did a very off-color parody of former VP Nixon.
The thing is how the VP is such a VIP. Shouldn't we keep the PC on the QT? Because if it leaks to the VC, you can end up in MIA and then we'd all be put on KP.
What?
Sir, the man is a walking keg of dynamite.
He's read unofficial news.
Ethel Merman jams Russian radar.
Oh, I've got a feeling.
What's he going to be like in 6 months?
Big dogs landing on my face.
What's he going to be like when he's 10 times as popular?
What's the weather like out there?
It's hot. Damn hot.
Hot and wet. That's nice if you're with a lady, but it ain't no good if you're in the jungle.
Touchstone Pictures presents Robin Williams as Airman Adrian Kronauer, the wrong person.
Very attractive man, Eversol. Don't think I even noticed.
In the wrong place.
This will not look good on a resume!
At the right time.
Good morning, Vietnam!
What a country. Heat, humidity, terrorism. Still, it's better than New York in the summertime.
All right,
how are we supposed to follow that?
All right. I mean,
don't you think you're setting us behind the eight ball, Elio?
All right, fans, that's it. That's our show for the week. We'll be back next Tuesday.
By the way, if we're going to do this properly, we might as well introduce ourselves according to our nicknames that you've selected for this special Royal Rumble retro episode.
Yes, I am Elio the Snake Canella, and he is my co-host,
Hacksaw Ben Pierce. And if you're confused, I can't help you. consider what we're reviewing and go back and do your research. Don't be a bunch of Julians.
You know what? That's it. That's a new name for when people don't do their research and they don't know something. That's what they're going to be called.
Exactly.
And actually, I got a bit of a story for you, because I did more reading and I learned something new about the Royal Rumble.
Oh, very good.
So before we get into that, I'm going to tell you this. I was reading this. Now, this I did get from Wikipedia, but this one is because they do reference October 4th, 87, so that's how I know this one, this part is reliable.
Exactly.
So, the original Royal Rumble concept took place on October 4th of 1987 in St. Louis, Missouri, with a 12-man battle royal. Now, Ben, before I go on, do you remember which Royal Rumble they decided to, Where they decided the winner would get a championship match at WrestleMania?
Can you repeat that?
Do you recall which Royal Rumble it was where the winner of the Rumble got a championship match at WrestleMania?
No, I don't.
All right, so that was that started at Royal Rumble 93. However, it was going to start at in 1987. So the winner, of course, of that Rumble was the one-man gang. But one-man gang was to have gotten a championship match against Hulk Hogan at the next event, which was going to be a USA Network special on January 24th, 1988. However, the ring announcer, which is Howard Finkel, usually during intermission, they announced the next event and some of the matches that will take place on that card.
Right.
And he, without realizing it, ruined the main event by announcing that it would be one man gang challenging Hulk Hogan. So the original plan was that they were going to have this USA Network special on January 24th, 88. But since everyone knew that it was going to be one man gang, They scrapped those plans and we got the Royal Rumble 1988.
So I wondered about that because Jim Duggan seemed like a random pick to win the match.
Right.
Now I freely admit that I'm not familiar with storylines leading into the Rumble at this time, but I can't recall him being involved in anything or being popular enough where he would weren't winning the Royal Rumble.
Well, because he wasn't. This was around the time where I believe I want to say he was feuding with Andre. So I want to say, because I remember it was one episode of Superstars where Andre was choking him out with the strap of his tights, and then Hacksaw was trying to break free, and the only way he could do that was grab his 2x4 and hit Andre in the head. So I believe that was one of the feuds that he was in at this time. Outside of that, I can't recall any other ones. And if you noticed, the last two in the ring were the Woman Gang and Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yes, I did.
So the winner of Royal Rumble 87 and the winner of Rumble 88.
Exactly. And it was, I will say, it was a better Rumble than I had anticipated it being. I kind of anticipated it being a clusterfuck, considering it was an experiment at the time. One thing that I would have really appreciated, and luckily they instituted this pretty quickly, is I know that they announced who was coming out and stuff like that, and they had the time, they had the countdown clock in the lower left-hand corner, but they really didn't make a big deal out of the people coming out. I don't know if that was because of the setup in the arena or what that was, but like they didn't have entrances for the first two or anything. They just kind of came out.
I felt like this was a very weird show, and now I know why. They want to call this a pay-per-view, but it was more like what I just said. It was a USA Network special. This is how you present King of the Ring 85, 86, 87 instead of the Wrestling Classic.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like the Wrestling Classic would have come off better if it was like a TV special.
Exactly.
Versus a pay-per-view, to be honest with you.
Exactly. We switched that around. King of the Ring 85 should have been pay-per-view, Wrestling Classic, a network special like we got here with Rumble.
Exactly, you could tell that they were still, playing around with some things, getting the formula right, but considering the time and considering what they were trying to do with the match, I don't think it turned out nearly as bad as it could have.
So the opening match was a random match because these two literally had nothing to do with each other at this time. It was Ravishing Rick Rude and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
And to be honest with you, okay, I have an appreciation for both these guys. I will admit I'm more familiar with Steamboat than I am Rick Rude. Okay. I mean
Rick Rude was WCW champion too, so he was there as well.
Absolutely, and I did know that. I'm not just saying absolutely.
Right. But I get you. You've seen more of Steamboat's matches. I get it. Is what you're saying. Oh, okay.
Yes. And so, but considering the talent involved, I was disappointed in this match. What it kind of reminded me of? I forget what event we covered, but Steamboat and Savage had faced each other before their WrestleMania 3 matchup, about a year beforehand, and it might have been the Wrestling Classic, if I'm not mistaken. For some reason, that's
I think it was the Wrestling Classic. Yeah.
But But it was kind of like just like that. It should have been much, much better. Since, like I said, because I don't think the Dragon is capable of having a good match, and I love Rick Rude as a heel. But there was something about this match that just wasn't clicking. And like you said, maybe it's because these two didn't have a lot to do with each other, and maybe they didn't work together that much. But you could, I mean, for me, I had to consciously remind myself, okay, this is still the 80s. This is still a different time frame from what you're used to watching, because to me, and I'll be interested to see what you think, because you've seen more from this time period than I have, certainly. This match to me was very repetitive, with the arm drags and arm bars.
Yep.
And punch exchanges. And also, the one thing that I wanted to ask you that really confused me numerous times throughout the match: when did WWE start enforcing tap out rules? Do you remember?
Sorry, tap out rules?
Like submission.
Oh, you know what? That is a good question. I am not exactly sure.
All right, well, hold on, because... Okay, hang on. So, okay, well, actually, I'm reading somewhere, because I'm looking it up now. Apparently, what Steamboat was doing during the match wasn't a tap out until about 9 years later. So that was...
I understand what you're... I understand what part you're talking about in the match. He was tapping the mat, I believe, and it looked like he...
Repeatedly.
I understand, yeah. Now I know what you're talking about.
Like, on two or three different occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very... Like, I'm like, isn't that a tap out? Because he was actively in a submission. A very painful-looking one, I'll have you know. And they were also making a big deal about how covering someone's mouth is illegal. Which was weird to me, because I don't think I'd ever heard that before.
Right.
But it was clear that they hadn't quite worked out submission matches, because I was like, is this ref missing something?
Okay, man, I have an answer here.
Okay.
Okay, so the question even says, when did tap out become a thing in WWE?
Yeah.
Okay, so as late as 1993, they were still using the verbal submission only.
Oh, okay.
So I believe shortly after that, around 1993-ish.
Okay, so they still had like 5 years left on this. And you know, the one thing that this and now that I understand that, I can forgive this a little bit more, because I was very thrown off by that.
Mm-hmm.
But this match had a lot of rest time.
Yes.
Especially when
I think it was Rude who had a Steamboat, like, I think like he had him in that camel clutch or something like that.
One of them was a camel clutch, which took forever before Steamboat stood up. I was like, oh my god, you know, what are we doing? I mean, Rick Rude's a big guy, with the time that he was taking to stand up, you would have thought that the Iron Sheik was sitting on his back.
I'm looking at the time. They gave these guys 17:39.
It was overly long.
Yeah,
I will say that, and Okay, this is just another thing I have to ask you, and I apologize if it sounds stupid, but the ending had Steamboat tapping out when he was like in a shoulder breaker like position, submission maneuver, to Rude. I assume it was by verbal tap out because there was no way that Ricky could have tapped out based on the position that he was in up on Rude's shoulder at that point. But then after that, the ref disqualifies Rude as he's walking back to the locker room because he pulled him in front of him a few minutes earlier in the match to intercept the crossbody. And it's just the most random thing. Like okay, but if you were knocked out so bad by that crossbody, then you shouldn't have seen it and it shouldn't have been acknowledged, or he should have been disqualified right when you regained your equilibrium from being knocked around.
And I'm actually reading that part right now, where Steamboat attempted the diving crossbody and Rude pulled the referee in front of him.
So the
Yeah,
the
and Dave Zimmer signaled for the bell as Rude was walking back. He just left the ring as the referee was disqualifying him.
but the disqualification should have happened like much closer to the execution of the move, like when Hebner originally recovered, not after Steamboat had already tapped out. So
I didn't like the ending.
there was just a lot of this match that either one I didn't understand, which has been clarified for me, so that gets passed. But also, the finish was horrible. Considering the talent involved, it was bad, and so that knocked the match down to about a 2-star for me. What number one? What were your thoughts on the match? Because I'm talking too much. And number,
No, and number two, you asked my rating.
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really like this match. Like I said, these two literally have nothing to do with each other at this point in time. There was never any interaction. There was never any build up to this match or feud or whatever it was supposed to be, if it was supposed to be that. And the ending was terrible. Dave Emmer is getting pulled in front of Rick Rude. It should have been a disqualification right there. Why he waited until Rude left the ring and walked to the back, I don't understand. And then after Rude realizes he's disqualified, he walks back to the ring and confronts the referee. It made no sense. I'd give this one a two.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also have to ask you about the Dino Bravo bench press segment.
And that one
Okay.
is that one is next.
Because, well, I know.
this was so weird, and this was just really a really bad segment. I was so bored.
This was executed so poorly. And I honestly, I felt so bad for Gene Okerlund. But we'll get into that in a minute, but I have to give my dad a personal shout out on this one, because he walked in to tell me something as this segment was going on, and he stopped dead looking at the screen
Oh. Oh no.
because One, he was like, what the hell? You know, commenting on Tino Bravo's hair. And then he gets distracted by Frenchie Martin. By Frenchie Martin. Once they actually say Frenchie's name, like, my dad had called him Frenchie before he even knew his name was Frenchie. I could have fallen on my ass.
Oh my
God. Thank God I was sitting on my bed and not in the chair at the time. I think I would have fallen over. It was so funny. Because he was like, what the hell?
Exactly. What the hell? I was like so bored. I'm like, I remember this because, okay, the first time I watched this pay-per-view, you remember when they came out with the Royal Rumble Anthology?
Yes.
So we got that at the library. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to get this anthology. And they had Royal Rumble 88, but like, and that's the first time I watched it on DVD, and it
felt really... Did you just hijack their entire wrestling section, Elio? Come on now.
Of course. I already told him, if any time you have a wrestling video, no one else will ever see that again because it's going to be mine.
Yeah, exactly. That's my boy. That's the guy.
But
because I would have been doing the same thing, so.
But like I felt weird watching this because it felt like a weird pay per view, especially this segment with Dino Bravo. Well,
and especially this segment because, you know, number one, let's talk about the structure of it, okay? Mm-hmm. Before we even get into the content,
okay.
And this is how you know we're an analytical podcast, because had you people watched this in our audience, you would have been like, what is there to analyze?
there's a lot to break down here.
But if you had said that, I wouldn't have blamed you. Because, you know, if I wasn't a podcast host, I'd be right there with you. But, you know, I've learned to kind of look at wrestling more analytically now.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, they bring poor Gene Okerlund down here. I've never felt worse for Gene Okerlund.
Right?
Like, how do you interview people while they're lifting weights, while they're putting weight on the bar, while they're getting the clips, you know?
And then Frenchie Martin kept speaking in French, and Gino Glenn's like, Frenchie Martin, please, English, please, for the people at home. And all these good people here in Ontario.
And also, you know, Dino Bravo has requested complete silence and for the sake of his concentration.
Ben, I have a question for you. Did you comply with Dino Bravo's request? Were you in complete silence?
Well, yes, I was, because outside of when my dad walked in, once I recovered from my hysterics, yes, I was. But it's just okay. The one part of this that made sense was that there was a slow escalation in weight, because I know from working out and lifting weights myself that you genuinely do have to work your way up. You can't just go to the max weight if that, you know, of whatever your goal is for the day or the rep or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, they're going like the 500-pound range, the 600-pound range, and then they get to, you know, the record was 705, they go for 715. Well, if you'll notice, all of his warm-up reps, and I don't know how legit the weight is on the bar. I don't know if they had fake weight on the bar or whatever. I don't know. And I'm not criticizing it if they do, because it's a wrestling statement. I get it. I don't know. But so the entire time for the warm up reps, Dino was just pumping it out, no problem. However many reps he did, you know, 500 pounds, four reps, no problem. 600, whatever, you know, eight reps, no problem. I mean, just, you know, it was like a video game. You know, once you master the mechanic, it was like, you know. But then he gets up to the to the record breaking weight, right? And again, the announced record was 705, so they went for 715.
Right.
And he can't get it up. And I'm like, oh shit, you know, what are they gonna do? The point of this entire segment is for him to break the record, and they're gonna make themselves look stupid. Don't worry, I see it. We'll get it done.
I'm looking as well. I just noticed it then myself.
And I'm like, oh god, this isn't gonna go well. But then they didn't cover it up well, because Jesse, the body Ventura, who's spotting Dino Bravo this entire time and yelling at the audience for not maintaining silence, and yelling at Okerlund and yelling at McMahon and all this other stuff. He's spending more time yelling than spotting. I'm like,
Wake him up and him for yelling at McMahon. Everyone wants to yell at him.
Yes. Well, especially today. So duly noted. But so as he's trying to get the weight up, and he just can't, because you can see it. The Ventura very obviously goes and grabs the bar. And then they have to say, well, he got the record, but then the announcers are like, I don't think he did, because Ventura was helping him. Because it was so obvious, there was no point denying it. But then later on, it was just like, yeah, he got the record. Well, it's unofficial, you know? And I'm like, if that was the planned way to execute the segment, what's the point of going after the record? It's just, right. I understand it's a wrestling segment. I understand it. We've seen that all the time in wrestling. My God, do you remember, Bobby Lashley's bodybuilding segments,
I'd like to forget it.
Well, trust me, I would too, but I can't forget his ass flex. It was just ridiculous. But it just wasn't executed properly, this entire segment. And it was just 15 minutes of what the hell are we doing?
Yep.
So this would be my lowest rated segment of the evening, because I just didn't see the point of it. I would give it a one.
Yep. I was just about to say, I'd give this a one.
So with that, we do need a break, because we're talking about, ass flexes and all this other shit. So let us take a real quick break before the virtual producer kicks us out, and we'll be right back with the rest of Royal Rumble 88.
All right, we're back, and we're going to continue with our review of Royal Rumble 1988, the next match after that horrendous segment.
Yes, and even the review that I'm using was different than the one that I use typically. Says, quote, terrible waste of time. Really bad. I agree.
It was. Now, so next match we have is the Jumping Bomb Angels versus the Glamour Girls in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the women's tag team titles.
Why did this have to be 2 out of 3 falls?
This was not a good match either. I really didn't enjoy this one.
On a couple different things. But luckily, I had seen the the Jumping Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls before, thanks to our previous episodes in this series. So I kind of knew what to expect going in, but it was just, it was not good. And just like the first match with Rick Rude and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, this was entirely too long. Now, think
3 years earlier, Leilani Kai was WWF Women's Champion.
Well, but and this is a very, very far fall from grace for her. And holy shit, what's even more shocking is the reviewer saying this match was pretty good. No, it wasn't. No, no, and no. But partially, you know whose fault that is? Vince McMahon's fault. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
No, I'm not imagining things.
Go on.
You know, as we all know, because we have eyes, The Jumping Bomb Angels are Japanese.
Yes.
And Vince was saying numerous times, and I mean numerous times, that he couldn't pronounce their names, yet he went on to later in the match. And he also referred to them as Angel Pink and Red, based on the fact that they had pink and red trunks on over their you know, one piece black ring attire.
Even I can pronounce their name, Norio Tatino and Isuki Yamazaki. How hard
is
that?
You know, it's... Well,
Vince?
Well,
how hard is that, Vince?
Well, it's not that hard, but
exactly.
It's just... But my point being, if Vince can even treat them with enough respect to know their names or, you know, call them by their names, and yet they're reduced to pink and red based on the color of their attire...
So bad.
Then how am I going to take your match seriously, let alone one that takes up 15 minutes of my time? So, and by the way, even though this is not a good match, these ladies were nowhere near that bad to deserve that kind of treatment.
Nope.
They were not, because at this point in time, once again, we're talking about Royal Rumble 88, so you have to keep in mind, we are not talking about women being treated like, you know, WWE divas, you know, or swimsuit models or anything of that nature. At this point, the women were still wrestlers. And so this was not helped by Vince's approach on commentary. And also... there was a lot of even the commentary that I'm using on this match is way to be professional, Vince, and I'm just reading that now after I made those comments, not before. So what does that tell you? Jesus Christ.
Right.
Now do you understand why I say fuck you, Vince?
Yep.
And then they hit maneuver talking about the Jumping Bomb Angels. So throughout the match, they're hitting moves like running forearms and splashes, and Vince is saying, "What a maneuver!" But then the splash misses.
Oh my. Like the commentary at this time was painful. Like My favorite team was Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. That's it.
Mine too. And I grew up with Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. And they are awesome. Don't get me wrong. I love Attitude Era Jim Ross. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the one that got me into wrestling. You know, he's the one that made me want to be, you know, a commentator myself. He's part of the reason why I do this now. So Jim Ross was a huge influence on me, and plus it helps that he's not a piece of shit human being, as so many we look up to tend to be. But yeah, in terms of, you know, time period or just period, frankly, I do agree with you that Monsoon and Heenan were the best. Their tandem was just fantastic. And you know, you a while back you showed me a clip of like an unfiltered clip of Heenan being interviewed by Monsoon. And they were like, Jesus Christ, fuck. You know, and it was hilarious.
Which one was that?
I don't know. I'd have to go back in our messages always. Okay. Sent me something. Yeah. And, you know, you had to be there, folks. So I apologize if that part was awkward. But my point is, so is this match largely based on this commentary. I mean, the wrestling wasn't horrible, but it was just so basic compared to what we're getting now. And that's partially due to the time period, but, like, even so, this was limited. Mm-hmm. So another 15-plus minute match that really didn't need to be. And, you know, even though I treated it with more respect than Vince, I just can't work past the obvious miscommunications and, you know, for this, it's saying the Jumping Bomb Angels were so unique at the time, but I'm watching them now, and granted, it's 2023, but I'm like, what was unique about them? And I'm not trying to be a smartass, I just don't get it. But no, this was not a good match. You could definitely skip this. As a matter of fact, the Glamour Girls, it says right here, the Glamour Girls won the titles back in June of 88, I'm sorry. And then in February of 89, the titles were abolished until they were bought back for this run. That sucks even more. and it's cursed even more than the 1989 run in 2019. Holy shit.
Now, okay, after this, we had the contract signing, I believe. Wait, I didn't give my rating. I didn't get your, what's your rating?
I'll give this a 2. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just, like, nothing about it stood out to me, and the commentary was so distracting.
Yeah, I gave this one a 2 as well. Now, okay, following this, we had the contract signing between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant for their rematch, which would take place on Friday, February 5th, 1988, on NBC's The Main Event.
Okay, and this was probably one of the cooler contract signings I've seen, Grant, because it was one of the earlier ones. Now,
but you know why it was cool for me?
Yeah.
Because Andre just stood up, took that table, and tipped it over onto Hogan. That was awesome.
Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I think Ted DiBiase's work in there was pretty good too.
Mm-hmm.
So this was definitely one of the more entertaining contract signings, because to me, contract signings nowadays are so overdone that it was like, you know, that it's just kind of hard to get invested in them. But, you know, it's like, it's Andre the Giant. How are you not going to get invested?
And I believe you watched that match from February 5th. The main event?
I'm not sure.
That was that was where they had the two referees, the Dave and Earl, where Earl Hebner was.
And then the Twin Magic, okay.
So
yeah,
this contract signing was a big deal at this time, right? Because this was a rematch 1 year later, after the WrestleMania 3 match.
And they were really putting that over. So I enjoyed this, and thus to this point, this was easily the high point of the evening. Now, believe it or not, and this is my first like really big pet peeve with the show outside of the Dino Bravo segment, because that was so bad.
Okay.
And the fact that this was early pay-per-view WWE, I don't want to hear that as an excuse. Just hear me out. Just humor me. What was the title of this pay-per-view?
Royal Rumble.
Okay. That's what I read, too. So wouldn't it stand to logic that the Royal Rumble would be the main event of this show?
Yeah, it was very odd. It was very odd placing on the card. I would have put this as a last match.
Well, it's logical considering you have a show named after it.
Right.
Elio, I don't think you're expressing enough discontent.
I'm very no. This makes absolutely no sense, though.
Because,
like, why would you put this match as the second last match on a pay-per-view that's supposed to be the Royal Rumble? It's weird.
It's absurd.
I don't understand how you end the pay-per-view with 2 out of 3 false match, which we'll get into after this.
Which, yeah, and I have plenty to say about that too, so I don't want to jump ahead too far. Now, but keep in mind here, folks, that this is the first Royal Rumble, so it was a little bit different from the structure that you're used to. Mm-hmm. Okay, it was not 30 men in the ring, it was 20.
Mm-hmm.
They still had the the 10 second countdown clock. I'm not sure if they stuck to the 2 minutes between competitors. Sometimes it seemed a little bit shorter, sometimes it seemed a little bit longer. So I'm not sure if they actually stuck to that. But the thing that hurt this match, I think, is they waited until. And part of this is even logical for the time, so I understand. They waited until much later on in the match until people really started getting eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue for me, and this is the same issue that I have with a lot of Rumbles, not just this one, is that it was hard to kind of figure out what was going on and where to look and all this stuff. So then the order of the entrance was just so, I know it always is, but the order of the entrance was just so random, I guess.
And I have the list in front of me, and actually,
well, I mean, I can tell you in order.
And Ben and I drew numbers for this Royal Rumble, and Ben, you had number 13, and I had number 5 in this Rumble.
Yes, and 13 was actually lucky in this case, because 13 was Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and obviously he went on to win that match, so I drew the lucky number there.
So, okay, I'll start from the top. So, number 1 and 2 were Bret Hart and Tito Santana.
Right.
And then number 3 was Butch Reed. Number 4 was Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Number 5 was my number. Next, Jake Snake Roberts, followed by King Harley Race. King Harley Race at this time. 7 was Jim Brunzel, who Ben is still has heat with
yes.
Ben. Number 8 is Sam Houston. Number 9, Danny Davis.
And for those of you that don't know, Sam Houston is actually the half brother of Jake Roberts.
Yes. Number 10 was Boris Zugov. 11 was Don Morocco. 12 was Nikolai Volkoff. Number 13 was Ben's number, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. 14 was Ron Bass. 15, B. Brian Blair. 16, Hillbilly Jim. 17, Dino Bravo. 18, The Ultimate Warrior. 19, The One Man Gang. And 20, The Junkyard Dog.
Yeah, and speaking of Junkyard Dog, I'm glad I remembered to bring this up. His run in the match was disappointing. That was very illogical to me, for two reasons. One, because he was such a big star, and two, because he was the last entrant, and his outing didn't go well. And I will give Jesse the Body Ventura credit in this regard for this Rumble. He really did make the numbers sound like they mattered. Because remember when I said that, like, the entrants are so, like, incredibly random? Like, you know, there wasn't really a lot of cohesion with the people that were in the ring outside of a couple of spots, especially early in the match when both members of the Hart Foundation were in there. But he honestly did a very good job of, like, putting over Bret Hart, because he lasted a very long time. He was one of the first two entrants, and he lasted until right after number 18 got in there, which was hold on, I can
tell you. Warrior. It was,
yes.
The Ultimate Warrior.
And that's another guy who had a shit run, and in that match, and you know, they didn't really put over the big stars. Everybody kind of got the same level of attention in the match. At least that's how I felt. How did you feel about that particular part?
About the Warriors run in this match?
What I was saying was it didn't really appear that the bigger stars got the lion's share of the attention. It really seemed like each.
No, it seemed like everyone got the same amount of attention. Like, no one stood out more in this match than anyone else.
Yeah, so I don't know if that hurt the match, because typically, you know, the rumbles that we see today, there's emphasis on particular guys.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Based on storylines that are going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, they weren't really telling stories.
But then, I don't think there was really any From what I'm seeing here, I don't really think there was anyone involved in like feuds there, like any of the 20 names on this list that were involved with each other at this time. I think they were just like randomly thrown in there.
So yeah, and so that tells you right there that this was the infant stages of the Rumble, and that the booking of it made no sense, because the Rumbles that we know, and this goes back 25 years for me, and even longer than for Elio, even though I have seen the majority of the Rumbles, because at one point I did have the DVD regarding the 30 years of the Rumble that you mentioned earlier. So I have seen the majority of them. Yeah, this one was not the best in terms of integrating storylines and really putting over feuds, and the commentators really seemed as confused as I was. So luckily in later years they cleaned that up. But the bigger stars really didn't feel like bigger stars in this match, which in one way I could see that as a benefit, when you had a lot of lower ranking guys in there. But like, how are you not going to put over Harley Race as a huge deal in this? How are you not going to put over, as much as we hate him now, but based on the character, how are you not going to put over, Ultimate Warrior or Jake the Snake Roberts, or Junkyard Dog? I don't get it. And then I'm
No,
yeah.
I was gonna say, and this Royal Rumble really had nothing like where the winner just won the match. There was no winner gets a championship match, and I think that was hurt by the year before, the prior year, where they messed, where they spoiled the results for that one.
Well, yeah, and in a way, I think they spoiled this too, with just the way that they handled it. Now,
Well, hold on, because can you, okay, let's say if okay, hold on. There was a, I'm trying to remember the title was right, my title was vacant because of the way it was handled on the Friday, the February 5th main event. Can you imagine if Jim Duggan, who was involved in the WrestleMania 4 tournament, ended up winning the championship?
well, and that would have made the Rumble seem extra important. So if they had thought to put the known stipulation in there earlier, which would have made perfect sense, because you have to have something on the line when you're wrestling 20 guys. Wouldn't it make, even if this is the guinea pig, it's why are we fighting each other? Why should I get in there and risk getting my ass kicked by 19 other dudes?
That's why this rumble didn't feel special. There was nothing in there.
It's just, it felt very random to me. And also the fact that it wasn't the main event. I know I've said that, but it just seems so weird to me, because the main event was not the match that the pay-per-view was named after. I'm like, there's a disconnect there. And not that I have a problem with either the Islanders
Young Stallions.
or the Young Stallions, thank you. But Paul Roma always left a bad taste in my mouth, so maybe it's just that.
You mean Hercules' former tag team partner in Power and Glory?
But no, but I got a bigger problem with Paul Roma, and
Oh.
can you guess why?
Wait. I think I know it's WCW. They brought him in as one of the four horsemen.
Yes. Gold star. Very good. Good job, Elliot. Very good. Because, you know, because I'm like, and this is a sidebar because Elio and I are wrestling nerds, so just excuse us for a second, but join us if you like, because, it, you know, you're listening to the show, so feel free to follow along.
Besides, our show, we do what we want.
But it's just, why was, and Ric Flair has rightfully gone off on this before, why in the hell was Paul Roma a member of the Four Horsemen? Furthermore, why was Sid Vicious a member of the Four Horsemen?
It made no sense.
You know, it's just, for fuck's sake. You know, way to bastardize what, in my opinion, is still the greatest staple in the history of professional wrestling. You know, say what you want, and maybe this is controversial to the current day fan, but I would still take the Four Horsemen over the NWO by a long shot, wouldn't you?
I mean, Four Horsemen is a classic. I love the Four Horsemen. NWO, okay, they were cool when they first started, but then they, like, everyone was joining, you know, like,
yeah.
So it's like, okay, now it's not anything special anymore. So it's like, why should I care about the NWO? The Four Horsemen, not everyone can join the Four Horsemen.
Except Paul Roma and Sid Vicious. That was a little bit of a fuck up.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the rest of them, even when it was like reinvented, I always say the originals were the best.
And fans, you know, there's also a point to this, because I was telling Ben off the air, we may start looking at old WCW pay-per-views.
Yes, indeed. Oh, and by the way, that ties into to the show too, because originally this show was called Wrestling History 101.
You told me the reason why we had to drop it, which was very weird.
So I don't want you guys to get confused. This is, if you've listened to Wrestling History 101 before, this is the same thing, but we're not calling it that anymore. So I don't want you to get confused when you look at that list of episodes. The reason why we're not doing that is because I happen to be, scrolling through wrestling stuff on Google, and I shit you not, I ran into Wrestling History with Ben such and such, and it wasn't me.
Oh, no.
You know, so it was like, oh shit. It was literally Wrestling History 101 with Ben such and such. I'm like, maybe we should change that. That's why we're not titling this or anything like that. You know, if this was a separate feed from the PNC Progression Wrestling podcast, and Wrestling History 101 had its own, then we would rechristen it. But it's really not necessary. It's still the same thing. It's just a subset of, you know, the conversation. So
this is our version of Wrestling POV Global.
Exactly. Because we used to, we used to review pay-per-views on the main show all the time. And then AEW, you know, really started increasing, you know, catching fire, and we had to cover all their pay-per-views. And then WWE has a pay-per-view all the time. And now, with AEW increasing its pay-per-view schedule even more, it's like, you know, if we tried to include it in the main show like we used to, it would just be really hard because there's always shit to cover, and we don't want to have 2.5 hour episodes every time.
But this one's fun because it's one pay-per-view and it's got a different feel to it.
Exactly. So this is just a way to do something that we enjoy and we feel that you would enjoy in a way that's different, but yet you can still get it and what we typically do. Well, hopefully you enjoy this. But I did not enjoy this Royal Rumble, getting back to the focus of the thing, because Paul Roma was in the main event, and I don't have a problem with Paul Roma outside of the fact that he was in the Four Horsemen, which is fucking ridiculous. But so this main event was a 2 out of 3 falls match between Young Stallions.
Are we done the Royal Rumble?
Yes.
Oh no, because you didn't give your rating.
I would give it a 3, largely for historical value. But
around there, yeah, I'd go with a 3. It's only a 3-star on this show.
Yeah.
All right, go on.
But it was still among the highest rated things. The highest rated thing I would say was the Hogan Andre contract signing. That was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And then of course the Rumble itself. I would honestly probably rate the Rumble higher if they had something on the line. If they had explained why it's so prestigious, if they had explained why they were having a pay-per-view called the Royal Rumble, you know, but they didn't. And even after the main event was over, they just kind of went off the air. There was no pomp and circumstance.
Nope.
But speaking of the main event, so the Islanders were taking on the Young Stallions. And I will always have a soft spot for the Islanders because, you know, holy shit, Haku. By the way, for our wrestling POV listeners, you people are a little challenged. Not nearly as challenged as the TikTok contingent that Elio deals with. But you people actually believe that Brock Lesnar would defeat Haku in a bar fight. You people suck. I don't know if I told you this, Elio. But after Tony told us, you know, the real quick line about Haku, you know, pulling out some guy's tongue in a bar fight.
Yeah, no, biting someone's nose off, yeah.
Oh, yeah, biting, yeah. I went and I looked that up. And I was recounting stories from different people about that. And apparently the cops showed up. And they said, everybody was pointing at Haku, and they were like, sir, did you... I had to contain myself so I don't burst out laughing telling the story. But they were like, sir, did you bite this gentleman's nose off? And he goes, yes, brother, it's over there.
They're great.
You know, and he's like, what are you doing? I mean... You know, even if you're a cop, what do? If there's somebody's nose on the floor, are you gonna try to arrest it, dude? I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'm gonna try to arrest Haku. I mean, he just bit somebody's nose off and he's just sitting on the bar. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with that. So I don't think we should skate over that story because holy fuck.
However, before we go on, we should go into commercial and then we'll come back to wrap this up with the final match.
So, sorry, I went into too much of a sidebar, but we'll be right back to finish it out. And stay tuned.
Okay, we're back, and before we went into commercial, we had gotten into the final match, the main event of Royal Rumble. 2 out of 3 falls match, the Islanders versus the Young Stallions.
So this match was actually unique in one sense for me. This was the first 2 out of 3 falls match that I've ever seen that actually ended after 2 falls. It's a cliche now, folks. There's a lot of cliches in wrestling. But, you know, whenever there's a 2 out of 3 falls match, it's like, oh, it's going 3 falls.
Yeah.
No question. Like, you just know. That is not necessarily a bad thing. But, you know, I think some of the mystique of some of these matches is taken away when certain aspects of them become so predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the case with 2 out of 3 falls matches. I at this point I'd much rather see a 3 stages of hell match.
Now, was it just me, or were they not focusing too much on this match? I think they were at one point. They were like talking about the British Bulldog in Islander's story.
Well, yes, they were. To your point, and so that took me out of the match even further because they weren't invested in it. Like nowadays, folks, commentary pisses me off so much that I often mute it. The only person who I legitimately like on commentary, the only pair is Michael Cole and Corey Graves. The rest of them can just stop.
Booker T.
What? Yeah.
I like it. Stop.
Nobody else likes it. but this match was cool in the respect that you know they were really doing it to put over the Islanders. They did the Paul Roma injury angle to put over the domination and you know heartlessness of the Islanders, you know, making him submit even though he had a busted leg. So that part was good, but the fact that they, and I don't know if this was a network thing or whatever, but I don't think so based on the fact that Vince said we're going to commercial, right? So, which was weird because originally I thought that this was a pay-per-view, but then I looked it up just now before I came back on the air with you. Apparently, they're saying that this was not a pay-per-view.
No, this was a USA Network special. I brought that up at the beginning of the show.
Oh, okay. Well, I just got confused because it was on the WWE Network. But anyway, yeah. So they pull Roma out before the second fall or before the... either before the second or third fall, and then
I think it was before the third. I want to say because then they cut to an interview with Andre.
Yeah. So I mean, I didn't mind the execution of it, but I guess it's like since I'm so used to 2 out of 3 falls going a certain way, and plus like the match itself wasn't all that engaging for me in the first place because I'm like, oh, just look at these two teams, it's going to be a squash. So for me the stipulation wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had already seen a 2 out of 3 falls match earlier in the evening.
You're right, now that I'm thinking about it, there were actually 2 2 out of 3 fall matches.
So I was pretty much done with the stipulation after after one match, and I can say that about it, any stipulation. I don't. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's a tag team match, I don't want to see another tag team match on the same card.
Right.
If it's a 2 out of 3 falls match, I don't want to see another one on the same card.
Then you want to review some New Japan shows?
No. although we have done that on like 2 occasions, I think.
Yeah. Those are all tag team matches. I get so burned out on those shows.
Yeah, but this is the first time that I have seen 2 matches with the same stipulation in the same show. I've never seen that before.
I don't remember seeing that either.
So that was very different. And then, so I didn't mind the result. I appreciated the story that they were trying to tell. Personally, for me, it didn't land just because for me, a 2 out of 3 falls match, you can't really have a commercial in between them.
Yeah.
And then come back and, you know, somebody's fucked up. Oh, well, because if somebody gets fucked up in the match, you know, then it automatically removes believability that they can come back, unless you're doing the Hogan comeback shit, and you're not going to do that with Paul Roma. No disrespect to Paul Roma. It seems like I'm piling on him, but I'm really not. But it didn't land. And also, it didn't help that the Royal Rumble was before this, when it should have gone last.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things going against this match. Overall, I would rate the show a 2.
Yeah.
And I think that's being generous, to be honest with you. Because there wasn't a lot here. I think it would, if you're a hardcore fan like us, or even a newer fan trying to like understand the history of like of the Royal Rumble, or you know, or of any kind of stipulation, this would be something that would be cool to see. The first of whatever it is, like if the first Elimination Chamber to me was awesome, the first Royal Rumble is it cool for historical significance. Same thing with earlier on in the show's history when we did WrestleMania 1 about a month back. But are they solid shows in and of themselves? No, it's just that it's the legacy that they built that makes them significant. So that's what you have to keep in mind when we're talking about these shows, because it's very different than reviewing a Survivor Series of today or a WrestleMania of today. Those are epic. These are setting the stages and really telling you the story of why these shows are important now, because they built the stars of yesteryear.
And that's why I get mad when people don't know their stuff, because they don't care about history, which is shows like this that paved the way for the shows that we're getting today.
Well, and in all seriousness, I think that's why we work together so well, because, you know, we're both cut from the same cloth in that regard, in that we appreciate wrestling history. Because I'm not going to lie to you, Elio, you are way ahead of me when it comes to, you know, wrestling history. And that goes beyond the fact that you're older than me. It's just you're ahead of me in that regard, but if I don't know something, I'll always go back and learn about it. Like if we're gonna be covering something on POV and I'm not familiar with it, I go back and I watch it. If I've never seen something that we're gonna cover on this show, you better bet your ass I'm gonna sit down and take notes and watch the show. And by the end of it, I'm gonna know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this show, number one, has our name on it, yeah. But, you know, I'm not interested in just being a goon on the internet. You know, there are a lot of, you know, assholes with a podcast.
Yeah.
We're trying to provide you with something different.
Yep.
You know, that sticks out. So that when we do criticize something, which we do a lot more, you know, on the other show, you know, you understand why. So, but that was our take on the Royal Rumble 88.
And I was saying, tell you the story between the British Bulldogs and the Islanders, but I'm gonna wait till the WrestleMania 4 for that, because there's a match on that card between the Islanders and the Bulldogs. So I'll tell you the story behind that feud on that pay per view.
Cool, and we will be covering WrestleMania 4 on the next edition of this, which is taking place on Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so we will take the DeLorean back to Sunday, March 27, 1988, start time 4 p.m. Eastern.
Oh God. I wish they still did that. You know, it's much more digestible now that they've split it into two nights. But folks, I can remember when WrestleMania felt like it was 8 hours long.
Now, WrestleMania 4 was 4 hours, but started at 4, ended at 8 p.m.
Yeah,
which is reasonable.
Well, a lot of the shows that we've seen are not reasonable.
Yes.
No, I mean, I can remember sitting at Jeff's house, you know, who joined us for an episode a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would both be falling asleep. and we are wrestling fans to our core, but it's like you can't expect to keep anybody's attention for going on, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours.
It's just, right?
You're not going to do that. So, anyway, hope you enjoyed the show tonight, and we will be back with more historical significance next week with WrestleMania 4.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.